right. Got the studio to myself. This is going to be cool. What am I going to do tonight? Ah, well, I can't resist. We're going to have to pull out RoboCheck again. So, come on. Let's go get him. Here we go. There we go. Got to readjust my mic back. All right. Let's see if I remember the codes to get this thing started. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's it.
Yes.
Hello, RoboChuck. So it's just me and you tonight.
Nice.
Yeah, this is going to be the best show ever.
Don't let it go to your head.
Welcome to Technorama. This is the show number 77 for January 23rd, 2006. I'm Craig Stepp, and Chuck DeMasi isn't here, but he's here in spirit.
Yes.
Yep. See? We got RoboChuck 2000 here. I think he'll be helping me out a little bit. Isn't that right, RoboChuck?
Yes.
All right. So tonight I'm going to talk about eBay a little bit. I got bit by an eBay seller. And I'm going to talk a little bit about the GPL version 4.3, version 3 that's coming out. I got some feelings about it, but, you know, I'm no legal expert, so I don't know. Anyway, maybe some of y'all can shine some light on it. So, let's see, what else? We got a bunch of links.
Nice.
That's right. And I think that's about it. So, let's get started with On This Day in Tech History.
On this day in tech history for January 23rd, 2006. This is January 23rd. It's the 23rd day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are 342 days remaining in 2006. It was on this date in 1855, the first bridge over the Mississippi River opens in what is now Minneapolis, Minnesota. A crossing made today by the Father Louis Hennepin Bridge. And on this date in 1960, the USS Trieste breaks a depth record by descending to the deepest point in the Pacific Ocean. The depth was measured to be 35,813 feet, or 10,916 meters. But later measurements showed it to be 35,798 feet, or 10,911 meters. It was only 5 meters. Also on this date in 1978, Sweden becomes the first nation to ban aerosol sprays that are thought to damage the Earth's protective ozone layer. And on this date in 1983, the A-Team debuts. Happy birthday goes out on this date in 1745 to William Jessop, the English canal engineer. And that's the way it was on this day in tech history for January 23rd, 2006.
Not many people know what it's like in the trenches. Just the few, the brave, the system administrators and IT professionals. Now, there's a podcast just for you and the battles you face every day.
Come on, boys, keep that network up.
Sarge, we need better technology now.
Incoming user complaints.
Strength and that security on the double.
We're crashing. Game over, man.
Listen to In the Trenches with Kevin Devon and George Starcher at kevindevon.com War is hell. Learn the best ways to survive.
You order the low-fat triple mocha latte.
In the trenches.
Hi, this is Mark from Memphis.
Who's Mark from Memphis?
Howdy, this is Mark from Memphis.
I knew a Mark from New Jersey once.
Howdy, it's Mark in Memphis.
Oh, Mark from Memphis.
Howdy, guys, this is Mark in Memphis. And yes, that's the same one. Mark from Memphis, Mark in Memphis. I got to listening to it, and it's like I'm really not from Memphis. I'm from other places, but right now I'm in Memphis, so I don't know. It changes around. Lately, it's been Mark in Memphis, and I kind of like that better than Mark from Memphis. I don't guess it matters a whole lot, but yes, they are the same person. Bye. Hey, guys, this is Mark in Memphis. Chuck, you were telling Craig to tell these folks he was famous. If you have to tell somebody you're famous, doesn't that mean you're really not? Hey, guys, this is Mark in Memphis. I wonder if you heard the story about NASA when they were developing the space shuttle. They wanted to make sure that if birds, you know, if they flew through a flock of birds, that it wouldn't break the windshield. So they developed a cannon that would shoot chickens at the windshield on the space shuttle. When people were developing that train you were talking about, that magnetic train, they wanted to test their windscreen against birds, and so they asked NASA if they would let them borrow the gun. Well, NASA sent them the gun and all the, you know, the information about it. They loaded up their first shot, shot it at the train. It burst through the windshield, cut the top off of the seat, you know, cut the seat back off of the engineer's chair and embedded it in the back wall. They were horrified. They sent all their lab data to NASA and said, what can we do? NASA studied their data and sent back a three-word answer. Saw the chicken. This is Mark in Memphis. Bye.
The number you have reached has been changed to a non-published number.
You know, I've heard that story before. I heard that same story about, I think it was the ESA had asked NASA for their research about the chickens and the windshield and stuff. So anyway, I thought that was pretty funny. I think they were talking about it on the Mythbusters one time when they were actually doing they made the big, gun that shoots the chickens right through the windshields to test it out. Anyway, that's a pretty cool episode. Anyway, so let's move right along. Tonight I got a follow up. It's kind of a follow up. We talked about this a long time ago. It was the Star Wars, animated GIFs, those little animated GIFs. It was the entire movie that somebody had in detail drawn out the whole show. The whole movie, rather. And anyway, tonight I've got a link to one of the Ghostbusters, and it is of exceptional detail. And so you have to go check that out. Not detail as in the quality of the image, but the detail of the story that they put in there is pretty amazing. Anyway, in our news tonight, I wanted to talk about the GPL. That's a little bit later. I wanted to talk about the Stardust project that actually landed this last week. Our buddy Douglas Welch over at the Career Handbook, High-Tech Career Handbook, and he actually was able to go to GPL the night that that thing landed. And I wanted to play this last week, and anyway, he's got several little clips, and I'm just going to point you over there and let you watch it yourself, because I think he's actually trying to change his blog into a little more of a podcast as well. And he has little interviews and clips talking to people during that same night. So I thought that was really cool and definitely worth checking out. But one of the articles I saw shortly after that it landed was that, I think it was like the next day or so, where they actually got into it and were able to crack it open and look at it. And the air, air gel, the modules were all intact. There was a little bit that fell out, but you could see you could see the particles that it actually collected were all there and intact, and some of them were big enough to see with a naked eye. So that's really exciting, and I'm curious to see where they find out about that thing. So anyway, moving along, and I hope this isn't going to be too short of a show. And you know, half the fun is having Chuck here. You know.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Thanks. Anyway,
what else have you found?
Well, I'm trying to get to it, Robochuck. The next thing I found, and somebody else pointed me to this on my blog, it was actually Missy M did, it is a Bluetooth PS2 controller for a Dell Axon. This dude had hacked split a PS2 controller. You know, it just looks like any other console controller, game controller that you'd have at your TV. He split it in half and put springs on the back so you can pull them apart and they would spring back together. And he put a Bluetooth device in it that sends the information to the Dell Axon so you can play games. And the games, you know, would use the controller. So I thought that was a really cool hack. You look at it, it looks really nice. It looks a little hacked, but hey, you know, he made it work. So what can you say? Anyway, so moving right along and coming up in just a second, I'm going to have my main stories. I'm going to talk about the eBay fiasco, or scandal, or whatever you want to call it. And I'm going to talk a little bit about the GPL.
Bob's holding me up a new headline from yesterday.
It sounds like crap.
That's what we like at Technorama.
Sounded dead.
Good stuff. I'm glad you found that one.
This stuff is so great, and you don't need high-level math.
Yikes.
When you don't have confidence, just fake it. Well, listen, tonight I want to talk about an eBay experience. And I know that not everybody's, you know, immune to having these kind of experiences. I've heard a few in the past. I've heard some really nasty ones. But my experience sucks. Anyway, what I've done, you know, I hacked my Xbox a while back. And I've got the software on it to play videos across the network using the Xbox Media Center. And all that's working good. All that works good. However, I need to get it on my network. And I can't really run a cable downstairs to where the TV's at because I don't have, you know, I live in a two-story house and it's kind of hard to fish, you know, Cat 5 through, you know, the floor and all that kind of crap. So anyway, I want to do wireless. Well, I got the wireless G router in here. So what I want to do is I want to put a wireless bridge, Ethernet bridge, on my Xbox so I can talk to it and FTP and all that good stuff to it. Well, I decided I'd go the eBay route. Now, granted, I didn't lose a lot of money, but what I did was I did a buy it now, got an automated email from the guy. It's like, no problem. I paid him, bam, right from PayPal. You know, I already got paid within 2 minutes. And I got an email back saying he got it. Now, here's the funny part. The email I got back, it complained about, it wasn't sure that the payment went through, but below was a receipt, which was a little confusing. I tried to email him back, no response. All right, but I assume they got paid because it looks like it came out of PayPal. Well, that was the 6th of January. Now it is here the 23rd, and I've yet to see anything, hear anything. And I went back and forth through eBay and some of the emails that I was sent and sent this guy messages saying, look, just tell me a tracking number or when you'll send it. And I've been nice about it, and now I'm, you know, really ticked. Now, I lost $60. Granted, that's not a lot. It could have been worse, you know, but I wasn't buying anything more than $60 worth. So at any rate, I sure enough went on there. Like I said, I went back the other day. Let me get my thoughts back together. The other day I went back to send him another email through eBay. Well, I saw that his contact information was no longer registered. I was like, oh crap. He had 13,000 power seller status. I mean, he had 13,000 replies. People mostly saying, this is good, thanks, A+, blah, 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 all that crap. So I think I'm just going to have to chalk that one up. Anyway, it sucks. So just kind of keep that in mind when you're eBaying. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with eBay, but I don't know. Something just seemed a little fishy, and I probably should have thought about it at any rate. So I want to talk a little bit about the GPL. And, you know, the GPL is the license that a lot of software for Linux and Windows and the OS X is licensed under. And this allows people to freely share their source code, and if there's any modifications to it, to deliver it back into the community, which is great. And so far it's been working. I mean, you see how popular Linux has been. Well, now version 3.0 is coming out. There's been two previous versions of the GPL. Now 3 is coming out. And looks pretty good. I'm looking at over at groklaw.net, which is an excellent site for tracking some of the, I think they originally started tracking some of the SCO news and stuff. But they've kind of bled into a little more of open source in general. And they have a chart, and I'm going to put this link in the show notes about the difference is a chart comparison between GPL 2 and 3. And it's pretty good. But the one thing I'm kind of curious on, and if somebody is an attorney out there, actually, I know some attorneys. I may try and interview one, and we'll get to that in a second. What I was curious in, what y'all thought about this, if anybody has looked at it. I was looking at it, and one of the things that kind of jumped out to me was their heavy stance against DRM. Now, me personally, no, I don't like DRM. I've taken some music that I purchased and converted it so I can put it on a device, not to share it, but a device that I can, of my choosing. Maybe I don't want to put something on my iPod. I want to put it on my, you know, my PDA and listen to it. And DRM less stuff has allowed us to do things like podcasting. I mean, if you had DRM on all these podcasts, we wouldn't have any of the listeners, or hardly any of the listeners that we have today. So anyway, I was curious to get what y'all's thoughts are on the DRM stuff. Now, looking at, and it's not the only example, but Sony, you know, they actually incorporated some of this GPL code into their project, and look what it did. Not saying that the GPL code did that, but they didn't, of course, say anything about it. They were going to do this under the radar, for one thing, but it was the DRM issue they were trying to promote, and look how bad it turned out is what I meant to say, was, you know, putting a rootkit on your machine and allowing backdoor access. I mean, come on. So, yes, I know there's some place for consumer protection for DRM, because I don't think it's necessarily good. Actually, I know a guy that works for a large cable. He works for a large cable company. They're, you know, pretty much nationwide. But he's telling me that they're actually not even doing anything with DRM anymore, that they're taking it off. Why? Because it makes their consumers happy, at least the ones that care. I mean, they got the little USB ports on the back of their cable boxes where you can record straight to a computer or some kind of device to capture. And they're like, yeah, just open it up. Because why? It doesn't make any sense to do this, because people are just going to get around it anyway. So why not do something a little more on the positive note and make your customers happy and not have to worry about the headaches? Anyway, I kind of digressed there, but I was just trying to get to the point that how much protection do we need from DRM? And if adding these provisions in the GPL are going to be restrictive to how some companies can use some of their open source products, or some open source projects in their products, and not be able to include DRM. Because I think one of the provisions was that if you used this GPL-3 licensed material, you cannot have DRM. It couldn't be used to create content with DRM. I'm not quite sure. So I'm going to have to look at it a little bit more. But there was a lot. That was the big sticking point with the version 3. Anyway, I think it looks good, and I think it's probably for the better. So, yeah, anyway.
Don't let it go to your head.
I'm not letting it go to my head.
Ooh.
All right, well, that's enough of that. Let's go ahead and move right along. Here's Chuck's next installment on How to Destroy the Earth.
Welcome to our series on How to Destroy the Earth. This is number 3 as we count down to number 1. Pulverized by impact with a blunt instrument. What you'll need for this experiment is a big heavy rock. Something with a bit of a swing to it. Perhaps Mars? The method for this is quite simple. Essentially, anything can be destroyed if you hit it hard enough. Anything! The concept is simple. Find a really, really big asteroid or planet, accelerate it up to some dazzling speed, and smash it into the Earth. Preferably head on, but whatever you can manage. The result? An absolutely spectacular collision, resulting hopefully in Earth, and most likely our cue ball too, being pulverized out of existence. Smashed into a number of large pieces, which, if the collision is hard enough, should have enough energy to overcome their mutual gravity and drift away forever, never to coagulate back into a planet again. Falling at the minimal impact velocity of 11 kilometers per second and assuming zero energy loss to heat and other energy forms, the cue ball would have to have a roughly 60% of the mass of the Earth. Mars, the next planet out, weighs in at about 11% of Earth's mass, while Venus, the next planet in, and also the nearest to Earth, has about 81%. Assuming that we could fire our cue ball into Earth at a much greater than 11 kilometers per second, I'm thinking more like 50 kilometers per second, either of these would make great possibilities. Obviously, a smaller rock would do the job. You just need to fire it a whole lot faster. A 10 trillion ton asteroid at 90% of the speed of light would do just as well. See the guide to moving the Earth for useful information on maneuvering big hunks of rock across interplanetary distance. This one is pretty plausible. Earth's final resting place, a variety of roughly moon-sized chunks of rock scattered haphazardly across the greater solar system. The earliest feasible completion date for this one is about 2500 AD, maybe? Good luck!
This is Adam Savage from Mythbusters, and you're listening to Technorama with Chuck and Craig.
Tonight, in our geek library, I have about four different links, and I've been going nuts in the links because, hey, some of these things just fit in a geek library. I mean, come on. This one is some cute Linux cartoons over at IBM. You know, who'd have thunk that IBM would be posting this kind of thing? You know, stuffy as they've been in the past. But they have links, some of the cartoons are kind of cute. They're short. They're flash, and I'll post, like I said, we'll of course have a link to that. One other link that I thought was interesting was, it was a look at what 2001 will be like from Compute Magazine from 1989. And some of the things was talking about, we're going to get our news straight off the fax machine every morning in our house. And, let's see, you'll speak to a giant screen on the wall and it instantly becomes a high quality TV monitor. Well, it's kind of close. Let's see, what is, this is the next 11 years, you'll see some incredible breakthroughs in your home. I like this. You'll see some incredible breakthroughs in the home, says Robert Simon, director of Lotus West, the West Coast R&D Center of Lotus Development, makers of 123. Oh gosh. Anyway, this next link is, it's a video, actually. Well, actually, it's an article, but has a video at the end of it, of liquid metal. And I guess they're applying some kind of sound and magnetic resonance to this liquid metal. And it kind of looks like spikes popping up. And then they release it and just kind of falls down like water. That, I mean, it's really freaky to watch. So if you get a chance, do check that out. I'm telling you, you'll love it.
What else have you found?
Okay. The other thing I found was a website that has a C64 emulator, the Commodore 64 emulator in your browser, and they will email you every day with a new link to a game. It gives you the blue screen and it starts loading and the whole works, so that's pretty cool. Well, let's get out of here. What do you think, RoboChuck?
Yes. Yes. No. Yes.
No. Okay, I think he's about to lose it.
Ooh.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, let's get out of here. You can call the listener line at 206-222-CHAT. That's 2428. You can email Chuck at chuck@chuckchat.com. You can send audio comments to chuckchat@gmail.com. Send me some info over at Craig. That's K-R-E-G at chuckchat.com. And don't forget to visit our website at www.chuckchat.com for forms, swag, webcam, all the good stuff, and the show notes, of course. I want to thank you for bearing with me. I know I seem a little flat tonight. That's not the same without Chuck.
Yes.
Yes, thank you. Anyway, I want to thank everybody, and we'll see you next time. A big binary high five to you. 101.